Hi, this is Ernie Hudson of Winston Zeddemore from Ghostbusters. When something's weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call?
WFOP!
Well, keep on busting.
Good friend, Mr. Drunkard STL on the Twitters.
Hello.
And guys, a special guest joining us this week, filling in for the albino alligator, from the Delvin Cox Experience. Delvin Cox is here. Hello, Delvin.
Hello. What's up, everybody? I'm here. I don't know their statement.
Guys, coming up after the break, we are going to talk to Rack Low. He has a new book coming out called Low Life, the autobiography of Rack Low. He started like a crew, Delvin, and they went and shoplifted a whole bunch.
Yeah. Seems like a weird episode to bring me in on, Mike, but I'm here for the ride.
Purely a coincidence, Delvin. And another coincidence. This was not planned. But guys... Brian Kranz, he mailed us a cola.
Thank you, Brian.
If it's a cola you see, you gotta send it to me. Buy it from the store, drunk will give it a score, he's the Cola King. I am Mike, drunk's the Cola King.
So
ironically enough, this one is called the Afro-Cola.
Also, yet again, we're episode to bring me in on, Mike.
Purely a coincidence, Delvin. I had this you booked is, before I had Rack Low booked.
This episode is also sponsored by Soul Glow.
I had you booked before the Afro-Cola showed up on my doorstep. And yes, Daddy wants a swig of the Afro-Cola. That bottle is gorgeous.
It's a gorgeous bottle.
It's a really very nice. Pretty glass bottle that the Afro-Cola comes.
Also, ironically, it's called Afro-Cola, but it's a product of Germany.
That is strange.
That is strange.
It's from Germany? That's pretty good.
That's really good.
You know, it
oh.
Kind of has a RC Cola taste to it. Doesn't it kind of taste a little RC-ish?
Yeah, so it doesn't have like the... like shots to the mouth like a Coca-Cola.
It's not sweet. There's no sweetness to this.
Okay.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. It's not as sweet as a Pepsi.
No, this is almost like the black coffee of colas.
But it doesn't have the pop rock sensation of a Coke either.
Yeah, Coke like hits you in the face. Drunk's taking a second swig out of it.
Wow.
7-7.
Seven. That's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Delvin, there's something that happened 2 weeks ago that I really want to share with everybody.
It might be brown sugar.
Okay. Yeah, it has like a smell. Like I smelled something like a brown sugar or cinnamon or something.
Yeah.
I love cinnamon.
Maybe that needs to come back into play, Drunk. You need to start sniffing it first, like wine connoisseurs.
Yeah. Give the swirl.
The Pittsburgh Penguins, a long time ago, had a player named Jaromir Jagr.
I know who that is.
And Jaromir Jagr was really good at hockey.
Still is, yes. Actually.
He's an older gentleman now. He played for a lot of teams.
I'm pretty sure he's still playing in Czech League.
I think he is too, yeah. But did you hear about this, Drunk?
I did not, no.
So the Pittsburgh Penguins were going to retire his jersey number and have a special Jaromir Jagr bobblehead night.
Okay. Sounds good so far.
The Pittsburgh Penguins are now victims of cargo theft. The Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads that were expected to be given out at tonight's game have been stolen. The shipment was apparently taken when it arrived in California. Right now, this is an open investigation. State and even federal authorities are trying to relocate that cargo. Meantime, if you go to tonight's game, you obviously won't be getting your Jagr bobblehead, but you will get a voucher so that you can get it eventually.
So they're still retiring his number.
Still retiring his number.
Good.
But the bobbleheads were stolen.
That sounds like some St. Louis shit, for real.
That does.
So this is them mentioning the bobbleheads being stolen at the game.
Oh, we're all on the hunt for these 18,000 missing Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads that were supposed to be given out here tonight.
18,000 bobbleheads stolen out of a cargo container.
That's one for each fan right there. That's a lot of bobbleheads.
And to keep it light, Jaromir Jagr made a commercial where he was going to go out vigilante style and look for the bobbleheads.
Buckle up, baby. Let's go find your friends.
So for the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of questions. Is Pittsburgh going to pay someone to make new bobbleheads? Or is there still a chance that they can find the bobbleheads?
When you mentioned this to me just now, the first thing I did was look up Jaromir Jagr Pittsburgh Penguins bobblehead on eBay to see if people were selling them. And there are a lot on there, and they are not cheap. They are like $94, $93.
Well, now it's a story, Delvin. It was just going to be a silly thing.
I was surprised it's not more than that.
But today it was announced that the Penguins got their bobbleheads back. And so I don't have like a news story about this because this is breaking news. I have the written statement from the Penguins, and I figured I would just have AI Liam Neeson read it to us.
Fair enough, yeah.
Here we go.
This is the official statement from the Penguins about the bobbleheads that they got back.
The Penguins were notified last week that a special cargo recovery team negotiated the return of the stolen property to a secure warehouse located in Ontario, California. The truckload arrived in Pittsburgh today and is expected to be delivered to PPG Paints Arena within the next week.
There was like a negotiation, Delvin. Like they held them hostage. Did you hear that?
That's crazy.
I want to know the whole story. I want to know who called and said what.
So if you're a fan, you got to go back to the stadium and go to like the gift shop.
They handed out vouchers.
I understand that. But yeah. You go to hand your voucher to like the gift shop at the...
I guess. Yeah, I don't know how the whole process works. I don't know if you can mail it in, what you have to do.
So they probably had to pay to get these back, right?
Do you think they paid a ransom, Delvin?
Aren't they on the verge of not making the playoffs for like the first time in like 20 years?
So they had to pay to get them back to give away some shit for free. Like, that's kind of insane.
I want to know the story, though, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Are we going to hear it? Or do you think it's going to be hush-hush because they can't tell us what the amount was?
Oh,
because
that's
that'll
hush-hush
encourage
for sure.
Yeah, they can't tell us
other
that.
Thieves to steal more cargo. But they did say they negotiated. They negotiated with the thieves
There's no way.
To get the bobbleheads back.
They negotiated with terrorists to get bobbleheads that they gave away for free.
What are they going to do with 18,000 bobbleheads? They can't sell them on eBay. Don't you think that they'd be like, hey, where'd you get these?
Penguins are the fourth worst team in the league.
Are they really?
That? Yeah.
Oh.
Or we're in the East, I guess I should say.
Well, they should have probably let them keep those bobbleheads then. Just like, fuck it, keep them. Why do we care?
Yeah, what are you going to do with these?
18,000 is a fucking lot. Same exact bobblehead.
That guy that has all the VHS copies of Speed. You think they probably thought they were stealing something good?
Probably.
And then they opened it up and they're like, oh, God damn it.
Well, they still kind of won. The pig was negotiating with terrorists. They're like, oh, here you go. We'll give you something for it.
Delvin, I found a guy on Twitter, and I don't know if you guys know this about me, but I do love music lawsuits. I do.
You do?
But wow. I also love really weird analogies. Okay. They are also among my favorite things. And this guy had a good one about abortion rights.
Okay. I'm all for it.
And I was a bit confused, and so I'm hoping maybe you guys can explain this to me. His Twitter handle, Delvin, is AAR95273. It's not a very good Twitter handle.
Not at all.
It's probably just what Twitter gave him, and he didn't know how to change it.
Yeah, he's an idiot.
He's an old guy looking down at his phone, and like these videos have 6 views. I'm the only person who saw any of this stuff. And he makes a lot of them. He makes a lot of these videos, and they're all weird. But this analogy is interesting, and I'm hoping we can crack the code, because I don't know if I understood exactly what he was getting at.
Okay. The man involved should have no decision at all in regards to her abortion. Okay, well, answer me this. If I put my money into a vending machine, does the soda that comes out belong to the vending machine, or does it belong to me?
What?
I think men ought to have the same amount of fucking say in an abortion than the woman does.
Okay, so the money is your penis, I think, right?
And that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And so the vending machine is the woman.
But,
and I guess what
but
comes...
a vending machine is public domain.
No, it isn't. I mean, the vending machine belongs to somebody. Hold on.
Yeah, but maybe anybody can go in a vending machine to buy something.
Maybe he'll explain, Devin. Hold on.
You don't have to ask for permission from the vending machine.
Because he put his dick, his money.
Money.
Into her uterus vending machine.
Vending machine, okay.
Yeah. And produced a child. A soda.
Uh-huh, soda.
Yeah. Now, if the vending machine wants to destroy said soda...
Okay.
Then why should the patron be charged to destroy that soda?
Okay,
the soda charged. That he put the money in the machine
money.
Specifically to get.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, no, you put your money in the vending machine like because it feels really good, right?
Have you heard of Jack Parr?
God damn it!
I guess in this analogy, he thinks that like the only reason to have sex is to make a baby, right?
Yes.
So
I think there are some clear flaws with this analogy.
So there's a disconnect there, I think.
Yes.
In that he thinks that I'm only having sex to make a baby and not because it like feels really good on my mind.
Well, the soda is delicious.
Yes.
But you're talking about eating babies.
There's one flaw that we're ignoring. The fact that sometimes vending machines don't give you what you pay for.
Oh, there's a little bit left. Maybe he's gonna tie
Vegas,
a bow on it.
I bought a 20-ounce soda. And it was about quarter full. I was so fucking mad.
We're gonna tie a bow on it, guys.
Why does a vending machine have the ultimate say in whether or not he gets the product he put his money in to get?
Dude, this sounds like a Dana Carvey character.
This is a real person,
doesn't it? Though, like, listen to him speak. That's how Dana Carvey does like some of his.
I'm like a redneck Seinfeld.
Are you guys as confused as I am, or? Can you help me with this? Okay.
He's just a dummy.
He's a dumb guy? I don't want anybody to mess with him. It's probably best that he continues to get 6 views. Yeah. But
no, I want people to mess with him. Bully him. I know people say bullying is bad. Nah, fuck that. Some motherfucker need to get bullied.
He's out here bullying an 80-year-old man. Fuck this guy.
I put my money in the vending machine.
Oh, good for you.
I was hoping maybe that I was dumb.
No, you're, yeah.
No.
Okay.
You're very smart.
Okay. Guys, I have one more thing I really want to share with you.
Okay.
The New Orleans Police Department, Delvin, they want a new police station because theirs is old and run down.
That's fair.
Okay.
And I just liked the way that the head lady made the case
for getting the new police station. I just wanted to play that for you guys.
The rats eating our marijuana, they're all high.
You heard that right. Rats eating marijuana from the evidence room. NOPD Chief Ann Kirkpatrick says sometimes staff come into work and find rat droppings on their desk.
When we say we value our employees, you can't say that and at the same time allow people to work in conditions that are not acceptable.
That's a lot better than what I thought she was going to say.
I have a solution for you, New Orleans police.
You get an exterminator.
Legalize it.
So that it's okay that the rats are high?
Yeah.
They're probably pretty chill if they're high, right?
Well, they're going to have to arrest the rats.
Dude, think about it. How many tourists does New Orleans get? How much money would they make off fucking legal weed if they had fucking 9 dispensaries down Bourbon Street? All kinds. Let me tell
probably
you.
Could pay for a police station.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, guaranteed. Yeah.
They just moved to a different building. Apparently, they left that building and just leased a different one.
That makes the
rats
most
are pretty
sense.
Bad in New Orleans, ain't they? They're almost like New York style.
What
rats in New Orleans?
Is there a lot of them?
Yeah.
I think Drunk's right.
I think everywhere has a lot of rats. Probably
just
right?
Because they're below. Sea level, and they spray the streets every night, so...
They spray the streets with what?
Water.
They spray the streets with water?
So if you go down Bourbon Street, they close about 3:30, all the bars, 4 o'clock, a truck comes out and starts spraying down the streets, and that's when they clean the streets and they take the trash out for everybody. They get trash taken out every day, and then they reopen it like 6 in the morning.
Why?
I don't know, people pissing and puking and fucking doing their drunken debauchery all over the street all day.
So yeah, there's too much piss and puke, so they got to take the trash out?
Well, they got to take out the trash. Well, how else are you getting taking the trash out? The streets. Street open sweeper. For people to walk up and down all day, every day.
Huh. I bet the trash bill is crazy if they come every night.
Yeah, that's insane. I think
it's a city thing for Bourbon Street.
It's just that one street that they come every night?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's different.
Yeah. It's just
probably still high as hell.
Well, I mean, it could be. I'm sure rent's high as hell on Bourbon Street.
Yeah.
But yeah, it hose it down every night. That's why I always tell you, if you ever go to New Orleans, close toe shoes. Because that water ain't got no place to go.
We found that out during Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, exactly.
The water has no place to go.
The water's got nowhere to go. It just evaporates.
Drunk, you should write a book.
Okay. He should.
You help me write it?
You have a lot of strange knowledge and interesting views.
I would help you write it, Drunk.
Thank you, Delvin.
Well, I think that Drunk probably just needs to like speak into a tape recorder and then like give a writer his words.
Thoughts, my musings.
For them to arrange.
I could do that.
Into something... digestible. Because you probably need months of Drunk thinking.
Well, that's the
things.
Thing. You need an interviewer to pull things out of me, is
yeah,
the deal.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we've gotten everything yet. It's been over a decade and we're still finding new things.
Well, I'm like an onion. I have layers.
I mean, the thing about you wearing shoes 2 sizes too big, that was recent. I would think that we would have gotten that long before we did.
Well, those are just certain brands, like Pumas. I got to get Pumas 2 sizes too big.
What about Converse? Really Converse big. Fall in that category?
I haven't owned a pair of Converses in a while.
Yeah, because Converse is usually very, like the Chuck Taylors is like very narrow, so
yeah.
You have to get like a
so,
bigger
size. I would assume I'd have to get like a 12 in those. A New Balance or a Skechers, I can get away with a 9.5. So.
Okay.
Delvin, I have a confession to make to you.
Okay.
So, Rack Low, his whole thing is Polo Ralph Lauren. He's obsessed with
Mike
polo.
Pulled out his only polo shirt.
Ralph
yes.
Lauren. Well, it's actually sadder than that, Drunk. I went to several thrift stores yesterday to try
just to get
find
one polo shirt.
A polo shirt. Because, I mean, if you're talking to Rack Low of the Low Life crew, you know, Low... is short for polo because they're into polo. And so
you got to have some polo.
if I'm going to be talking on video to Rack Low, I need to be wearing some polo, right?
That's correct.
And I hope upon hope that he notices my polo.
I'm almost certain he won't.
I purchased this today specifically so that I had something polo to wear for Rack Low.
Why didn't you tell me to wear something polo?
Do you have anything?
No.
Oh.
But back in the day,
yeah.
I used to have.
Did you know there are certain types of polo that's acceptable and certain types that are not?
So, Delvin, this is just a gray long sleeve T-shirt with a little bitty horsey
that
man
works.
On it. This is that's okay. Okay, yeah, it's just a gray T-shirt with a little horsey man on it.
So, what doesn't work?
But it's a very small horsey man. I don't think he'll notice it.
He'll notice that probably.
Okay.
I think Polo Sport is the one no one wears. There's certain brands of polo that people don't buy. The cheaper brand, no one buys.
Polo Sport's a cologne, isn't it?
I think it's also a regular brand of polo, too.
Brand. They do like rugby shirts and stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
And nobody wears that? That's bullshit?
Nah. It has to be polo. Ralph Lauren polo.
What if I used to be a Tommy Hilfiger guy? Will he like denounce me for this?
He'll be fine.
Okay.
No, Hilfiger's
a big thing in the 90s.
He would steal everything, but then he would just keep the polo
for himself.
I have one FUBU shirt, Delvin.
No, you don't.
I do. I have one FUBU shirt.
What kind of FUBU shirt? It's just a regular FUBU, or is it the one like the fan?
Can you see if I can find it in my closet? Well, I'll show you my FUBU shirt.
I'm going to guess that it's navy and yellow.
No, I have one FUBU shirt, guys.
I used to have tons of FUBU stuff. I used to have the baseball jerseys. I had the football jerseys. I used to love FUBU. I had the Fat Albert jersey. I had a ton of FUBU stuff. I might have had this. I had several of the hats. Oh, okay. That's a nice shirt.
Dude, did you wear that with some Vans? I can see you having those exact same color Vans.
I still think it's wild that like FUBU's like...
I've had this FUBU shirt since high school. I got this at Value City. You remember Value City?
Absolutely. That was my jam.
Yeah.
It's wild that FUBU's like in Walmart now. You just go to Walmart and buy FUBU. So wild.
Yeah, no, this is old as shit.
So did you also have Jenko jeans?
I never had a pair of Jenkos, no.
Yeah, my parents wouldn't let me.
I had two pairs of No Limit Soldier pants.
Delvin, you know what Jenkos are, right?
Yes, I do.
Were they big in Miami? I was thinking they're too hot for that.
No, they were pretty big. We like to wear baggy clothes.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. So they were pretty big at the time.
Dude, I would love that to come back.
You had No Limit jeans?
No Limit Soldier sweatpants.
You was about it.
They were bright orange.
Like
they had zippers on the side. They were fucking cool as shit. That's kind of what Rack Low's book so far has reminded me of. Is you remember that Master P song when he taught you how to make crack?
Yeah, ghetto dope.
Yeah, because Rack
Low, I know that song.
Every now and then I'm reminded of ghetto dope and I turn it on. Remember, make crack like this.
Make crack like this.
Ghetto dope.
He tells you from step one to the end, how to make crack. The whole verse is like that.
Yeah. No, so he'll probably get to other stuff eventually, Delvin, but so far, like the first couple of chapters, he's just like telling us how to steal stuff, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, but how to steal somewhere. Stuff in the 80s, though. That's 2024, you can't steal stuff like that now.
You probably get caught on video. Yeah. There probably wasn't a whole lot of video then.
Now you got to just do PPP loans and stuff like that.
And even if you were on video, it was really shitty video. Like, right. The cameras have gotten way better.
Yeah. Yes.
Facial recognition software.
Yeah. Yeah, thieving isn't as easy as it used to be. Not to knock it. I mean, you know, thieving probably had its downside then, too.
Games changed.
Yeah.
Thieving's all digital now, man. It's not like it used to be.
You got to finesse people now, Devin.
Back in my day when thieves were thieves. Just run in the store and just take what you can get and run out.
Yeah, now you got to like figure out how to like pretend to be a hot chick.
Either that or you just got to like drive the car into the building, right? And then run out.
Yeah. Now I got to pretend I'm a Nigerian prince every goddamn month.
You got the great accent for it.
I bet it came back temporarily during, you didn't really hear about it, but during COVID when everybody was wearing masks, I wonder if thieving went back up.
Oh yeah, it definitely did.
That's good.
Yeah, it went back up.
Yeah, shoplifting, that's a forgotten art. Guys, what we're going to do, we're going to take a break.
Oh, the good old days.
I think we're going to regroup. We're going to think about our life choices. And then we're going to come back. We're going to talk to Rack Lowe.
Shoplifting legend.
Shoplifting legend.
Am I wrong?
No.
See cyber crimes like this. Cyber crimes like this. Cyber crimes like this.
Coming up.
I'm the flyest in the city. The flyest in
rapper,
the city.
Author, and fashion trailblazer Rack Lowe.
Keeping the spirit alive.
His new book, Low Life, is in bookstores April 23rd.
Bible and reputation.
Stick around.
Yeah, yeah. I'll throw some soup, baby.
It's water. And then they have cans of soup. Soup. And they throw the cans of soup. That's better than a brick because you can't throw a brick. It's too heavy. But a can of soup, you can really put some power into that, right? And then when they get caught, they say, no, this is soup for my family. They're so innocent. This is soup for my family. It's incredible. And you have people coming over with bags of soup, big bags of soup, and they lay it on the ground, and the anarchists take it, and they start throwing it at our cops, at our police. And if it hits you, that's worse than a brick because it's got force. The perfect size. It's like made perfect. And when they get caught, they say, no, this is just soup for my family.
Live.
Internet radio.
Online and on your mobile device.
WFOD.
It's time once again for the Hollywood Beat with your inside source, Drunk. And this week he talks to Jack Black about his new film, Kung Fu Panda 4, in theaters now.
So you do more karate-ing, or what's this one about?
The story of Kung Fu Panda 4 in a nutshell. Po, he's got to face his most fierce opponent so far. The chameleon. A creature that can recreate any one of the demons of his past. And even himself.
Chameleons don't do that.
We've got the best animators in the world.
So I'll understand when I see it, maybe?
Yes!
This November, pooping your pants is on the ballot. Whether you vote red or blue, there's a strong likelihood it will be a man with a full diaper. So make sure you're registered, America, and get out there and vote. Just because they can't control their bowels doesn't mean they can't control you.
Once again, WFOD, wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Welcome back. Our guest tonight is the OG founder of the infamous Brooklyn street crew, The Lowlifes. He tells his tale in a new book called Low Life, the autobiography of Rack Lowe, available for pre-order now or get it in bookstores on April 23rd from Powerhouse Books. Guys, Rack Lowe is on the program. I got the book yesterday, so I haven't gotten too far yet, so don't spoil the end for me, but...
Okay.
It comes out on the 23rd of April, right?
Yes, the release date is, the 23rd of April.
And this is it, when you write the book, are you afraid that nothing else can happen to you now? If it's not in the book, then it's like not the official story anymore, right?
It's so many elements, so many moving parts to the story.
Yeah.
That I really couldn't fit everything in the book, so it'd definitely be a follow-up.
Oh, okay. So you cut it off at a certain point?
Yeah, I gave it like from 1988 up until like 1995, 97.
So a lot happened in not a lot of time, huh?
Yes.
And so yeah. I've gotten through the first couple of chapters. You give a lot of good tips on ways to commit crimes.
Yeah. You know, that was just the situation as a youngster, a youth living in Brooklyn, New York. The things that I described in a book was just, you know, different hustles and different forms of different strategies I used to accumulate, you know, money at a fast rate, at fast pace. So I just wanted to give people a backstory into who Racklow was as a youth coming up in Brooklyn, New York, in the main streets of Brooklyn.
Let me ask a question. What time frame was this? This was like the mid 80s to 90s, like start of hip hop era, essentially?
Yeah, pretty much the golden era of hip hop. So from 1988 up until 1997, yeah.
So that had to be amazing. Just the streets bumping the Rakim and stuff like that. And that had to be wild time. You know, I grew up in Miami. I'm from Miami, so I know that around that same time, it was the Miami Bass era. And we also had the scammers and things doing this thing, jacking for the polos and going to the store. So it was kind of a very parallel thing between Miami and New York, with a little bit different with music. You know, around that time, y'all had the Rakims, the Kool Moe Dees, the LLs. We had the Uncle, we had the Poison Clan and stuff like that. But it was very similar.
Definitely. And it's good that you mentioned hip hop music, because hip hop music was sort of the soundtrack to my youth. So all of those rap groups that was pretty much coming out of New York, but pretty much, you know, wherever they came from around the United States, you know, even in Los Angeles, those artists really had a great impact on me and allowed me to tap into, you know, things that was happening in other places in America, but also as a motivator, as far as wanting to survive, wanting to be a part of hip hop life, and just continuously express myself through street life as well as fashion.
Yeah, I hear it in your music. I hear a lot of different influences. Who are some of the guys who influenced you to do hip-hop?
You know, Kool G Rap.
Yes.
Of course, Rakim, Big Daddy Kane. You had Poor Righteous Teachers, Brand Nubian, Special Ed, Master Ace, Gangstar, MC Shan from the Juice Crew, KRS-One, Boogie Down Productions. You had, you know, Brother Jay from the X-Clan. So it was a multitude of different artists that really sort of impacted me and guided me through the golden era.
If I'm Polo Ralph Lauren during this time, do I like you or am I mad at you? Because on one hand, you're making me cool to people who weren't buying my stuff.
Right.
But you're also ripping me off at a rapid rate.
Well, if you're Ralph Lauren, I think you're fortunate, because I myself and the crew of people that I am associated with, we pretty much provided the corporation with free advertising, marketing, and our influence was so great around New York City and the tri-state area. But even, you know, beyond state lines, that we pretty much influence people to go out and buy the clothes. Through the low-life lifestyle and through hip-hop music, we sort of kept the brand alive. We kept it relevant in our neighborhoods, you know? For instance, with the Ralph Lauren brand, a lot of the clothes that he made or designed, it was for certain activities that you enjoyed in life, like skiing, yachting, hunting, a lot of outdoorsman type of activities. So we pretty much gathered and accumulated all of those clothing and we made them relevant in our neighborhoods. us hanging out on the corners of Brownsville and Crown Heights, Brooklyn, we would bring all of those types of styles, you know, and those type of identities right back to our neighborhood. So we'd be on the corners or just hanging around dressed in all yacht gear, dressed in hunting apparel, you know? So in a lot of these, in our neighborhoods, there was no yachting, there was no boats around.
Yeah.
But we sort of made those clothes relevant and made people want to dress similar to us based on how we coordinated the clothing with the colorways, the different materials. And we made it very, very attractive.
Was it meant to be just like a, I want to be a rich guy and wear rich guy clothes type thing? Or was it meant to be kind of like a thumb up in the nose kind of thing to, you know, you're not making stuff for us?
You know, so based on the type of clothing he was made, it was definitely for like the collegiate preppy type of kids, you know, the kids who pretty much had, you know, access to a lot of finances. But unfortunately, in our situations, we didn't have that type of access. But we never looked at it as it wasn't designed for us, you know, because our struggle and our come up was more based around survival. In the process of surviving, Ralph Lauren just became our uniform. It gave us an identity. It made us different from other people in the neighborhoods. And it made people look at us as if we were in a certain tax bracket, you know? Yeah. So it worked both ways for us.
The crazy thing about that is, and I explained to Mike, because I think he'll find this fascinating, is the fact that because they were boosting clothes and they were the original clothes that they were getting, if you weren't wearing the original clothes, you would get clout for that.
Yes.
So it would force you to go buy the original clothes. So you'd either have to go to a booster or you have to go in the stores and buy them.
Definitely. And in most cases, people didn't have the money to go and buy it. They couldn't afford it. So they pretty much relied on people like myself, the boosters and the shoplifters, you know, to get their hands on it.
Well, and it sounds like you kind of just asked questions to other guys you saw. Like when you saw guys walking around with big bags of quarters, you asked them, hey, how'd you get all those quarters? It seems like your crew kept getting bigger and bigger. Were you losing customers as you were adding people to your crew? Are the people that you were selling to, do they eventually say, hey, just let me come with you?
No.
No.
There was always a separation because, you know, as we were going on these boosting sprees and these missions, we had created our own clientele. We created like a customer base. So we had people that really relied on us and awaited our return to come back with the merchandise to provide them with. Yeah, but they never sort of like shared the experience with us as far as going into the different stores and racking up. It was a complete separation. Yeah. So a lot of our customers, they pretty much sold merchandise like retailers in our neighborhoods. And we would pretty much supply them with the merchandise, whereas they would resell it to the public. And we also had like individual customers that sort of relied on us to bring them Polo in particular, or all the other different fly hip hop brands that were available, like Nautica, Guess, Tommy Hilfiger, Lacoste, Descente, Prince, you know, Sergio Cecchini, Benetton. So even though we specialized in Polo, Ralph Lauren, we still accumulated all of the hot brands that was available on the market.
You kept most of the Polo for yourself, right?
Yeah. Definitely kept a lot of the Polo for ourselves. And to that point, we had accumulated so much Polo that we started competing with each other to see who had the most. And we all started to create what we call Polo mansions. Whereas if you come into our households, everything was Polo Ralph Lauren. I mean, the sheets, the comforters, all the clothing. And then it became some sort of like, you know, I mean, like even the lamps, the plates, the spoons, everything became Polo. And then we started like expanding into all the accessories that Ralph Lauren had put on the market. So it sort of became like a lifestyle. Well, it is a lifestyle even to this very day.
Yeah, because that came down to Miami. Like, everybody down here was wearing polo tees and stuff. That was like a big thing down here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did they ever reach out to you?
Like Trick Daddy. Trick Daddy was one of the, like, a big representative of the polo down in Miami.
Yes.
I remember Trick Daddy was doing his thing, yeah.
Did they ever reach out to you in any official capacity? Like, ask you to be, like, a brand ambassador or anything? Or
yeah, sort of. Like, so currently, I had started this event in 2010 called Low Goose on the Deuce. It's a huge fashion affair that takes place like in the middle of Times Square. And Ralph Lauren Corporation, you know, the photographers, the video crew, they had came out, you know, they filmed the event. And we had the opportunity to be advertised and placed on the Ralph Lauren app, the Polo app.
That's dope.
Recently, about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, I had took that same event. I took it to Paris, France. So we had an event right in front of the Eiffel Tower with all of the polo heads out in France. And the Ralph Lauren Corporation, they pretty much attended that event as well. Hmm. So they're very in tune with us. They follow us. They know the international impact that I have as far as, you know, the culture. So they're definitely involved, definitely. And they also featured us in the Ralph documentary that he put out a few years ago.
That's cool. Wow. So yeah. I guess what's the elevator pitch for the book? It's your life during a period of time where you were coming up. You started the low lives.
Right.
Did a lot of shoplifting. Where do we go from there? Where do we hit in this book?
Well, it's a coming of age story, one of survival and starting a lifestyle based around negativity, but having a positive outcome as far as, you know, my journey and what I'm actually involved in now, you know? So back in the 80s, you know, I was heavy into hip hop culture and street life. But throughout the years, I sort of made some real, real great changes, whereas my focus went from the streets to pretty much helping to build the community. Currently, I'm a case manager. I work with the homeless population, at-risk youth. I work with the veterans. And my whole agenda is to assist them in obtaining and establishing employment of different types, finding housing opportunities, connecting them to educational and vocational opportunities, and just providing them with a multitude of life skills that will help them sustain, you know, as far as life is concerned.
And they're still in Brooklyn?
Yeah, still in Brooklyn, New York, yeah.
Have you been in Brooklyn your whole life, pretty much?
Yeah. I've been in Brooklyn my whole life. So I lived in Brownsville, Brooklyn, Crown Heights. Pretty much like 6 or 7 different sections of Brooklyn I resided in. I'm currently in Canarsie, Brooklyn.
Okay, that's dope.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What was the process for you like? Because, you know, you started off boosting and stuff like that. And you go from boosting to being recognized by Ralph Lauren for your work, essentially. So how did you go from, like, doing the illegal life to kind of making it, legitimizing it and making a name for yourself doing it?
Well, just realizing that, you know, as a young man in society, I wanted to be a part of the solution and not the problem. So even as a youngster, I always had the vision of me, you know, doing something constructive and being a part of the community and helping people to rise, you know, to their fullest potential. So I knew, as a teenager, that wasn't the end for me. You know, it was a journey for me. It was a mission. And I was really, really heavily interested in making a life change. You know, I met my wife in 1989, you know, when I started to get my life together. I transitioned from the street life and I sort of like got more on the road of educating myself, being connected to the workforce and sort of like carving out this career in the field of human services. It was definitely a struggle in the beginning because you know, being a part of street life, that's what I relied on as a youth coming up. So I just had to make some critical decisions, some changes, and just make the transition from negative to positive, you know, with the support of some great people that they challenged me. They showed me my different options and they allowed me to visualize myself in a better position that didn't really involve, you know, interaction with the law anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so they sort of like allowed me to see the other side of the fence as opposed to, you know, the life of crime. And I just sort of like took advantage of it. I wanted to test it. I was very, very engaged in those activities. And, you know, luckily for me, everything worked out for the better.
I don't know the best way to compliment your writing style. So I'll just say I really enjoy like the short chapters. And it's just seems like a dude telling me a story in a bar, which I love.
Okay.
I love your writing style. It's like a page and a half. And then there's another story. It's just story after story after story, which for a guy with a short attention span is great. Really enjoying the book so far, Racklow. I hope to finish it. Hopefully we can do this again sometime, man.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. So as far as the writing, you know, I didn't really want to add too much fluff. I wanted to give people the rawness, the realness, and I wanted to get right to the point, you know, to let people know what I was about coming up, you know, in the streets of Brooklyn. So I want to give them the real story live and direct, you know, right in their faces. Hopefully, you know, while you're reading the book, you can sort of like feel like you're actually there with me. So that's how I pretty much approached it.
That's what I pick up a book for. I just want a dude to tell me some stories. So mission accomplished.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, man. It was cool talking to you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man.
Dude, that turtleneck was fly as a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, that's your thing, man. He's fucking fly, right? That's where he got into the polo. Right?
I kind of wanted to ask him about, you know, the like ink tags, but I didn't know how to go about that.
Oh, he mentioned them. He said that they fucking hated those things, the ink tags. The book is really interesting, Delvin.
You gotta check it out.
Yeah, he does a whole lot of shoplifting and a whole lot of telling you how. They were stealing from payphones, and they jiggle the payphone to see how much money was in it, because if there wasn't enough money in it, it wasn't worth their fucking time.
Interesting.
But they can't do that no more because there ain't no payphones. Didn't say anything about parking meters. You could probably still get those.
No, a lot more cars. Miami,
those are gone. They have pay by phone now.
Or like the kiosk with the card, really.
So, Racklow, the book is called Low Life, The Autobiography of Racklow. He wrote one a couple years ago, but I think that's mostly just pictures of all his cool-ass polo stuff. Don't get that. Well, maybe get that one if you like this one. But this one's good. This one's stories. So, yeah, Racklow. Cool.
Yeah, and if you like hip-hop, go check out some of his music. It's pretty good.
I think he was in his bathroom, Delvin.
Looks like it.
I saw a shower curtain back there.
I know what? I know Jody P will appreciate this. He was in his bathroom. The smoke detector was in there, and it was not going off. So there you go. It was not beeping.
Drunk, my pick of the week is the Roadhouse remake.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's bad. But it's so good.
But it's A++.
Yeah, no, it's great. Conor McGregor, they just told him the name of his character and said, go beat that guy up. It's a ridiculous film, but it's so much fun. It knew exactly what it was supposed to be, I think.
Yeah. Made for the 2024 crowd, because you can't have too much sex and things anymore.
Roadhouse is one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah.
I love Roadhouse. If that's on cable, I'm watching it.
Sure.
It sucks, but it's great.
Movie.
I like bad movies.
Pretty campy. Pretty campy.
Yeah.
I do too.
You see like bad movies on a new one? Way better than good movies. What?
Yeah, they're really good.
That's
I said,
thing.
Did you see Van Damme's on a new movie?
No, you can't say that.
Jean-Claude Van Damme's making a new movie? It is.
Yeah,
serious,
I saw it the other day on Twitter. Let's see if I can find the name of it real quick.
You stepped all over Dark Fate, and that's a bad movie.
I hated that movie.
Yeah.
I thought that sucked.
I know. I didn't think it was that bad.
Do you have a pick of the week?
Yep, Drunk's pick of the week is going to be X-Men 97 on the Disney Plus.
Oh, haven't watched those yet.
Yeah, so I started watching the old ones in preparation for the new ones, but I'm anticipating, and by the next time I'll be on, I'll have a couple episodes down. So
they get all,
I have
the,
watched
all the voices back?
It's great. They got most of them back.
Yeah, some of them are dead. I think Apocalypse is dead.
That's correct. Some of them are dead. And most people are like in their 60s.
Delvin, pick of the week. So,
I have two.
Ooh.
One I will not recommend because I don't want to freak Mike out. It's Quiet on Set, which is the Nickelodeon documentary.
Delvin, I don't want to watch that.
I know you don't. So I have a second one.
You're going to give me nightmares?
I don't want to watch it. I don't.
That I think you will find fun. This past week's Monday Night Raw.
Pretty good.
Did The Rock sing a song?
No, it was better. The Rock whooped some ass.
Oh, good.
It was amazing. The whole episode felt like an Attitude Era episode. CM Punk was there cursing all through the show.
God. Delvin, this Rock coming back stuff, I can't get enough of it.
It's great.
Every time The Rock cuts one of his 13-minute promos, I'm there on YouTube watching it. I don't watch wrestling.
Mike, let me tell you what The Rock did. This was so fucking awesome. He came out. Cody Rhodes in the ring doing a promo. The Rock comes out to the ring, says nothing.
Stares at him for like 3 minutes.
Stares at him for 3 minutes, whispers to him, "I'm going to make you bleed tonight." It just walks off.
That's the whole
and
thing?
No, there's more.
Did they do this whole intro where he comes out and they play the song and everybody cheers?
He did the whole intro.
And then he just stood there and looked at him for 3 minutes?
Yeah.
3 minutes. Then says he whispers to him, "I'm going to make you bleed tonight." You don't see The Rock for like the rest of the show until the last 10 minutes. He comes out and beats the shit out of Cody Rhodes for 10 minutes straight, makes him bleed, takes off this belt, put Cody Rhodes' belt on it, and while he's beating Cody Rhodes' ass, he's talking shit the whole time. Oh. It's amazing.
Yeah. I can't get enough of this.
Talking about how he's going to give that belt to his mama.
Yes, Mama Rhodes.
That's pretty good.
Guys, the Delvin Cox experience. Delvin, is that what I'm promoting? The Delvin Cox experience?
Yeah, definitely. Delvin Cox experience. Check it out anywhere you get podcasts. Also, Mike, the name of the Van Damme movie is called Darkness of Man.
Ooh, Darkness of Man. That sounds good. I'll watch a Van Damme movie. Like, I'll give him a chance. If he doesn't do the splits, I'm turning it the fuck off, though.
Right.
You do the fucking splits,
Cyber
Van
Cop
Damme.
Style.
That's what we want from you.
That was the name of that movie, right? Cyber Cop.
Time Cop.
Time Cop.
Yeah, Time Cop.
Universal Soldier 1 through 20.
Guys, we'll do it again pretty soon. Check out Rack Lowe's book. Check out all of the stuff. Check all of the stuff out. Check it out. Right?
I'm still standing.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this installment of the Dub Fod. If you enjoyed it, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you listen to podcasts. While you're there, take a moment to share a link, tell a friend, leave a review, or do any of the other things podcasts ask you to do. This operation is completely independent, and so your support is appreciated. Leave questions, comments, or whatever you want on our voicemail at 636-487-HAND or by email to Mike, Travis, or Drunk at WFODshow.com. Special thanks as always to our Patreon sponsors, the Duchess of New Jersey, Assistant Treads, Benny Michaels, Liquid Lozenge, Brian Kranz, Valerie Carpenter, Jay Adson, and Rabbit Poundings. You can become a Patreon sponsor yourself to get early access to episodes for as little as a dollar a month at patreon.com/WFODix. WFODshow.com has our entire back catalog. It also has a place to fully immerse yourself in dubfod lore with cola rankings, flat drunks, and more. You can also follow us at WFOD Show on Twitter and Instagram, or WFODix on Facebook and YouTube. The music featured is provided by Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. All AI voices are fake, all content is probably a joke, and we think you're really nice and cool. We'll be back next week, but really, we're never gone. Take care.
Seen this AMC Dune bucket, popcorn bucket? I bet I missed a couple weeks. I don't know if you guys talked about this yet.
I think that the people were joking that they were all gonna fuck it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? It's wild looking.
It kind of looks like a fleshlight.
Yeah.
But like an evil fleshlight.
Yeah, and I mean it's a little loose. But it's kind of hot dog down
maybe
the hallway.
Not if you're a thick daddy drunk.
Well, that's what they were saying. Like if you're like a tuna can, this is like perfect.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Would you fuck the popcorn bucket?
Like if I had one on hand.
Oh yeah. If you, I mean it's only $29, but they're going for like $850 on eBay.
Because the rumor got around that you can fuck them.
Yeah.
And so people want to.
Yeah.
You don't need to buy $850 things to fuck.
Oh, yeah. You can go to Priscilla's and get them for cheap.
To clarify, I wouldn't spend $850.
No, but you'd spend the $29.99.
Like if it was at a thrift store for $1.50.
But you wouldn't pay the full $29.99 at the movie theater? Because you do get all-you-can-eat popcorn, too.
No, like if I found one in a dumpster, I would. I don't think that I would pay more than a couple bucks for it. Like, if somebody offered it to me, like somebody said, here, take this home and fuck it, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, lightly used, I just ate popcorn out of it once. Okay. But I don't think I'd spend money.
Yeah.
I wouldn't spend money on it.
I think I'm on the same camp. I wouldn't spend more than $10 on it.
Well, and here's the thing. I guess... You got to wonder, like...
Did they fuck it first?
Yeah, that's the thing. Did they fuck it first? Because that's what I would do. I'd fuck it once and then sell it for $850. Like, if there was $850 to be had...
And that thing doesn't that look easy to clean. You'd have to put that through the dishwasher.